Yeah, he's our favorite nerd. Helping you gain the upper hand with your computer, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
There's a lot in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. Steve Kasky is going to talk about a digital bridge for folks that have spinal cord injuries. Dr. Doreen Galley is going to continue on that idea of telemedicine. On the IT Pro series, I've got a listener question from Rachel. What should I do when two different IT people give different advice? I also have a question from Kim. Why is setting up duplex printing different across printers? Susanna asks, why is her external monitor for her laptop fuzzy? Emma, why is her internet service provider's promise of unlimited data being throttled? On the scam series, a fake Amazon alert offering a refund. Deb Shadovitz is going to step in for Keith M. Sidor. She's going to talk about smartwatches. And Mark, he's going to talk about two smart ovens. One of them, the Panasonic Home Chef 4-in-1, and Anova has a precision oven number 2, and we'll be talking about all of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. If you miss any of that, of course, go to the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com, and check out the podcast. It's always available there, but you can also reach me there. Just scroll down to where it says contact us today, and I will assist you there with your computer questions and your technology concerns. Of course, if you'd like to speak to me in person, the phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Now, normally I would dive into the news, but at this time of year, news gets all kinds of crazy, and there's a ton of stuff, a lot of news in regards to all of these different sales that are going on, and I want to kind of redirect in that direction. I want to talk about Cyber Monday. Yes, we just got finished with Black Friday, but not really, because Black Friday usually now lasts through the weekend, and it's just extended upon by Cyber Monday, which is now actually, some of the folks are calling it Cyber Week or Black Week or whatever it is. And yeah, okay, we have seen this kind of effect for a while now, and everybody's throwing their own spin on it. Look, Cyber Monday is coming up, and I'm going to call it Cyber Monday for the rest of this segment. And look, it isn't the digital Wild West of deals. There is a minefield of manipulative marketing, too good to be true tech discounts, and a lot of other things that I want you to really think about. I want you to have concern, and I want you to know how to navigate all of this stuff responsibly. And we talked just last week about a lot of the inflation of original prices to make the discounts look bigger than they are. I will tell you, one of the things you can use, there's a price tracking tool out there called Honey. And I think it's actually, I'm doing this from memory, and I apologize. I think it's in cahoots. That's probably not a great term for it, but I think it's run by Amazon, which is, you know, that's okay. But you should be aware that it will give you some idea there. I do want you to compare across multiple retailers all the way along, especially if you're getting into any of the tech gear. We're talking about televisions and laptops, your smart home gear, your gaming consoles. And I want you to check around, because different places are going to have different deals. You also need to be very careful. There's a lot of these setups that are set there that really appeal to the fear of missing out, aka FOMO. And these quote-unquote limited time deals may come back. So you need to really exercise caution. You need to be sure that you are getting what you want. So take your time. Don't panic buy. Along with that, of course, you do want to watch out for counterfeits, gray market technology. There's a lot of different things in some of the fields where, you know, one of the things I do is I collect automatic watches. These are self-winding mechanical watches, and I have to be very careful. I don't want to pick up the Japanese version of the watch or the Korean market version of the watch, which may be priced down by an amount because they do cost more here in the United States. Because that's how the economy works. They know that people are willing to pay more here. There is a kind of a drawback to that. If I get one of the Japanese versions, the Korean versions, or whatever, the warranty may not apply here in the United States. I may not be able to get servicing on those. Now, these are mechanical watches. They don't require as much servicing as you might think. But that's still something I need to weigh out very carefully. You do need to watch out for scammers. There's the usual advice that I'm going to give you. Watch out for fake websites, any of these phishing emails. Be very careful about any of the ads that are coming via email this year. There's already just a huge amount of these, and I've been seeing them all month and getting kind of overwhelmed by it. You also need to watch out for any kind of prize messages disguised as retailer notifications. As a matter of fact, I'm going to talk about that on the scam series later on in the show. You do need to be very careful. You need to watch out that you are buying, you're communicating, you're working with whoever it is that you expect you are working with. Additionally, with the technology, you do need to watch out for the various places that give you overly technical jargon in regards to the tech you're buying. You want to stick to clear, plain, comparable language whenever you're dealing with these things. You want to watch for, yes, similar specs, and you want to watch for reliable retailers as well. Now, Let's get into the next item here, and that is I want you to be thinking about what Cyber Monday, Cyber Week is all about, and what Black Friday is about. It's all about impulse buys. So I want you to really think about spending responsibly. You need to identify, is this a want or a need? Is this purchase going to be something I'm going to be happy with next month, in 6 months? And does the discount justify the purchase, or is it tempting the purchase? See, a good deal is only good if it fits in your budget. And a good deal is only good if it's something that you are going to get that extended lifetime of usage out of it. There's a reason why I haven't gone to any of these, the Apple Vision Pro or even the Meta headsets. I already know kind of where I'm at. I feel just in my heart, I feel like even if I were going to get one at an amazing discount, let's say I could get the Apple Vision Pro for, $300. I know myself, I have a good feeling that in a matter of a month is going to wind up sitting on a shelf gathering dust. So I'm very careful. I think about my purchases. I spend just a little bit of time evaluating, is this truly a need? Is this something that is going to be really valuable in my computing experience? And I want to encourage everybody to start thinking like that. You should always be thinking like that. I'm trying to promote, yes, healthy consumerism versus just dashing on out because, ooh, it's on sale. And we all know someone in our lives that has that kind of activity. Hey, I bought this and I saved, $500 on it. Yeah, but you spent $4,000 on something you're going to use three times. So if you don't know that person, you might be that person. Just think about it. I do want you to think about purchases responsibly. I want you to think about the items that are going to truly return value. And that is, think about solid-state devices, your drives. Think about storage this year. I want you to think about RAM. This is going to be a good time to buy. Both of those seem to be going up. If you're buying a laptop or a desktop, I want you to make sure you're getting current generation CPUs and that you're future planning. So you're thinking about getting a little bit more memory now than you think you will need. So if you think, okay, I can deal with 16 gigs of RAM, you might bump that on up to 32 gigs if the price is right. Stick within the ecosystems that you already have in your home and think about avoiding things like older tablets, cheap no-name earbuds, and rock-bottom smart TVs. Hopefully this gives you a little bit of guidance. Coming up next, Suzanne asks me, why is her external monitor for her laptop fuzzy? That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it, meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off. You take really good care of your listeners.
Suzanne reached out to me. Why is my external monitor showing blurry text, even though the resolution matches my laptop? And I think I've got the answer for this. Actually, I know I do because I already confirmed that with her. Suzanne did reach out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com. You can do it as well. Scroll down to where it says Contact Us Today. Again, ComputerTalkRadio.com. And I'll get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. So Suzanne's issue, external monitor, she's got a laptop, and the external monitor is showing blurry text. Now, I've talked about this in the past. I have 43-inch screens. They're LG screens, and these are actually televisions, which I've repurposed as monitors. It's not because I have poor vision and I want big, huge text on my screen. It's actually a matter of I want more desktop space to put all of the different apps that I have running up on screen. Right now, I have a Windows Explorer folder. I've got the audio mixer. I've got Microsoft Word, Microsoft Excel, Outlook, and a couple of browser windows open all on the screen at the same time, full screen into each of their areas. So that takes a lot of screen real estate. So I use it's a 4K television screen, and that allows me to see a lot of stuff. Now, in Suzanne's case, we start looking at what are the display settings that we've got going for this. See, laptops, they typically put out 1920 by 1080 or some variation like that, somewhere in the 2K resolution area. And if you were to set the monitor, or in my case, the television, to a different setting, if I were to set my television to just show 2K resolution, that can come through looking a little bit muddied, if you will. It's just not going to be clear. It's not going to be crisp like the 4K resolution that the monitor is capable of doing. So we start looking at things like that. And that's basically all that is it's really just the wrong display settings. And you may have it set for 100%. You may have it set for the full resolution of the monitor. And we refer to that as the monitor's native resolution. And you may set it to 100% scaling, but you may still need to do something else. You may need to be looking at the settings of your monitor. Now, we think of these as some pretty basic settings. We think of this as color and tint and contrast and brightness. But in reality, with a lot of monitors these days, there are so many different settings. We can start seeing, like on televisions, we have sharpness settings. And those sharpness settings are designed to allow for accommodating some of the things that we might plug into, the different information we might be providing. And that is something you need to be checking. You need to go through the list of those settings. Now, I could read off all of the different settings on my LG TV that's sitting here, but it's going to take me probably 10 minutes to not only read them off, but give you an idea of what each of these does. Don't worry about that. I'm not going to do that right now. But you should look up online each of those settings, and you should understand what each of them does. You can also experiment with those same settings on your monitor or your television, whatever you're using, and you can see how they work before and after you set them. So you basically sit down and you note that, all right, it's set to 50 right now. And you go to 0 and then you go to 100. You go, hey, this is better. This is worse. This is the same. And if it's the same, stick with 50 and experiment around those settings. And you might find that 60 is better. And you just work through. And some of these settings are just on and off. Some of these settings are probably 1 through 5 or 1 through 10 instead of what I just described. It's just a base point to start off with. And you want to just experiment with these individually. Next up, one of the things you want to check, you want to make sure you are using decent cables. Now, let me be very careful about this. This is a digital signal. But some of these cables can be rated for different levels of that signal, that digital signal. So they're not able to put the information through as much as a slightly more expensive cable. And I'm not saying that $5 cables are bad, but I'm not saying the $50 cables are what you need. It's just an option to look at. And, you find something in the middle ground and you check the specifications of those and make sure that it's meeting what you need it to meet. Next up, you're going to think about something like your drivers and the GPU drivers, graphics processing unit, your video card drivers. They may have their own set of settings that are in there. And those settings may include sharpness or smoothing or anti-aliasing. And these are things that are going to make the signal that gets to your monitor look different than what you think it should based upon how you set your screen. Now, sometimes those settings in the drivers may actually override the settings that are on your screen. So you need to check there because some of those settings can be off. They may be overriding and telling the computer, the monitor, I know what's best. You trust me and rely on me for this. Next up, we can talk about clear type. And this is the Windows thing, and you just click the start and type in the word clear type, and that is an option that'll come up. Sometimes it might be color profile if you're using some of the other applications out or operating systems out there. And clear type is a neat thing. I'm going to cover clear type because most people out there are still using Windows, some 85%. And clear type is an interesting setup where you start it up. And when you start it up, it's going to walk you through a simple set of instructions. And those instructions allow you to set the text on your screen to make it easier to read. And it starts off with making sure it's enabled. That's a very easy thing. Next up it's going to ask you a number of different questions. And as you answer those questions, it's basically going to check to see what monitor you have, making sure it's at the right resolution and things like that. And then it's going to go through a series of screens. And it's kind of like the optometrist. Which one looks best to you? You go into the optometrist, they go A or B, A or B, and then you select one. In this case, they're going to ask you to select a number of different from a number of different solutions, and you're going to have to select the best one on the screen. It's all about what looks good to you, and that should hopefully clear up some of that different set of information that's there. And that may help make things a little bit more clear. Last up, we start thinking about your distance and viewing angle. If you're too close to a large monitor, that can actually make text harder to read. If I put my nose up to the screen, everything off to the other sides, left and right, they're going to be fuzzy. And so I have to make sure that I am a suitable distance away from whatever monitor I have. And some monitors are going to be much better at it than others. OLED screens are going to be better than LCD screens and things like that. Does it mean you have to get an OLED screen? No. Does it mean you should stick with an LCD screen no matter what? No. I will note that Suzanne's issue was actually the first one. She was using 1080, 1920 by 1080 resolution on a 4K screen, and that was throwing it all off. And look, it's a simple thing. And but there are a number of different areas, obviously, as I covered. We need to remember every time we're dealing with all of these problems that we have with our tech, with our computers, there may not just be one solution. There may be a number of them, and we have to just explore them all. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. And if you have any questions in regards to computers, technology, any of that, I'm here for you. Again, 888-NERD-888. Keith McIntyre is out this week. Covering for him is an old voice. She has been with Computer Talk Radio off and on through the entire life, 17 years. And one of the things that we talked about a couple of times, and I don't know if we ever recorded this, Deb. Deb Shadovitz, I'm sorry, Deb Shadovitz joins me now. Deb, one of the things that I know we talked about, but I don't know that we ever talked on air, and that is smartwatches. And you were very resistant to the idea of smartwatches for the longest time. However, one of the first things when you got on the phone with me recently, FaceTime, technically, you showed me, you were showing off, I get an Apple Watch. All right, what happened? How did this change?
But first, I showed it to you because we were talking about charging, and it's the one more thing to keep charged.
Yes, yes, that's right.
Which is part of why I was resistant to it. When the Apple Watch came out, it had some appealing features, but it was one more device to keep charged.
Mm-hmm,
and yeah. I loved my analog watch. I still love my really unique analog watch.
Mm-hmm, same
and
here.
Yeah. I also had one that had a globe on it, which was kind of cool because I was traveling, you know? But anyway, so I just, it had a lot of benefits to it, but it was one more thing to keep charge, one more thing to look after when I was traveling and I wasn't ready to. So you're asking me what happened that made me get one?
Yes.
Well, you know, it has a lot of good medical abilities. Mm-hmm. And when you don't need something, it's one thing to have it. But when you need something, it's a good thing to have.
Okay.
So for me, what happened was cancer. Mm. I had cancer. I went through several months of the chemo stuff, which is kind of a really cool technology, the way they delivered it, by the way. And then it was time for me to go off from 2.5 hours away from my house to proton beam radiation. Was a specific radiation I wanted to get, and there's not a lot in the country. And I wasn't too thrilled about going off to a residential hotel to live when I wasn't in my brother's street or a phone call away from my mother or someone I knew.
Yeah.
So, and my mom, honestly, thank goodness I still have my mom, and she didn't really want to be where she couldn't drive to see me quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So my compromise was to get this is the Series 9. So mm-hmm. it has the, I was holding out until they could do the diabetes reading, but that never happened. So, but this was
that's what I'm holding for.
Yeah, it's a different thing because I have to stick a needle in you. But anyway, I finally said, you know, the Apple Watch would be a smart thing to have now. And right before I went down to San Diego to have the treatment, they released the Apple Watch 9.
Mm-hmm.
And so I picked it up sight unseen because we already knew all the features.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. And it was on my wrist almost all the time. It's waterproof. I can wear it in the shower. I could swim with it. It was always there. If I fell, the emergency systems would be called.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just very handy.
So you got the cellular version of it.
I did. I went for the extra money and got
sure,
the,
yeah, okay.
I wanted a constant connection. It was also really nice not to have to schlep my phone, not to have to carry my iPhone with me everywhere I went.
Mm-hmm,
it was a freedom. I had enough to carry. I had enough to deal with. Sometimes
yeah.
I was walking with a cane, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I kind of, it became just a part of my clothing,
mm-hmm,
you know, to have it. And I learned very easily too, that when you leave your watch, your iPhone somewhere, you could say, "Hey Siri, where are you?"
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't say that loud because I couldn't have my phone just hear it. or it would have been recorded. But it was nice to say that. And I would get, "I'm over here."
Yes, yeah, yeah,
my
yeah,
bed
yeah.
Or whatever. That was very handy. But I love having the watch. And the other feature that I really like, I mean, there's all the medical things, but you could push the side button and beep where your phone is. So if you can't find your phone, you can make it sound. You need the watch to find the phone. It's kind of crazy. And I spent many an hour in the waiting room waiting for my treatment,
mm-hmm,
where you have to be ready in your gown and all that stuff and leave your things behind. But I could take my watch into the room with me,
mm-hmm,
and push the buttons and do my heart test and my blood oxygen test.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I
yeah.
played around. So I did my heartbeat test probably 10 times in 1 hour sometimes. More than anyone needs. It was something to play with.
I'm totally curious. Do they have games available for the Apple Watch?
The heartbeat's not your game? Darn! I thought it was. No, I have never found a game for it. And if I did, I actually thought when I first got this, I got the lady size. And I said, how am I going to press my 4-digit security code with my fingertips?
Tiny.
I don't know that I would want to play a game with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't try that.
The screen's a little small for Candy Crush.
Yeah, it would be. but people could call me at any time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was on silent and I could always reach out to someone. Mm-hmm. Usually it was to say, "Hi, I picked it up on my watch. Give me a minute to find my phone." and
yeah,
most people,
fair enough.
Most people that use the watch keep an earbud in their ear,
mm-hmm,
so that they could talk. I tried that once on a neighborhood walk to stretch my legs and exercise my body, and it was disaster. I didn't know what button to touch. I know I'm a tech freak, but I just like could not get the watch phone to hear through the mm-hmm. ear thing. It was too many things to tap. I brushed my hair away from my face, and suddenly the music is disconnected or playing or stopping or starting. So I really still like analog watches, but mm-hmm. I do have, there's so many good medical things on this watch that I wouldn't want to be without it.
You know, it's interesting with tech. Sometimes these different things in our lives push us forward towards adopting the various tech things in our lives. I went into smart homes. I knew about them prior to this, but I went into smart homes back in the early 2000s when my grandparents passed away because I wanted to keep their house lights going and not let anybody know that nobody was there.
When tech serves a purpose for a good reason, it's great.
Definitely. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Deb Shadovitz guesting in for Keith McCedor. I'll be back with more Computer Talk Radio in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The website computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That is just one of the ways you can reach out to me. Of course, scroll down to where it says contact us today. I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions, your technology concerns. We really enjoy this. We really like engaging with the audience and hearing whatever it is that you're struggling with in regards to technology. Mark Brownstein joins me, and Mark, what do you have for us this week?
Well, I have two smart ovens.
Okay.
One is good, the other is great. Yes. The first one is the Panasonic Home Chef 4 Plus 1. Now, imagine a microwave oven that does more than heat your water for coffee or make popcorn.
Okay.
The Microsoft 4 Plus 1. Microsoft, I'm sorry, Panasonic. I've got Microsoft in
yes,
my head.
That's
Panasonic
all right.
4 Plus 1 is more than just a microwave oven.
Mm-hmm.
Although the microwave part is one of the best that I've seen, best that I've used in a long, long time. I had a long line of microwaves that worked and they stopped working. So this one does air fry, it will convection bake, it broils. It links to an application called Fresco. It's a recipe database, and the database has a fair amount of recipes, tell you what the ingredients are and how to put them together and which settings to put on it. So it's helpful. It gives you some idea what's going on, and the oven tells you what stages the cooking is. It also tells you when it's done cooking. So it's pretty good. It bakes pretty well, except when it doesn't. I could not get a good frozen pizza out of it. The
okay.
toppings might have been cooked. The crust was limp and soggy, but I can bake other things in it pretty well.
Uh-huh.
So if you've got a space or just a little bit of counter space that you'd use for a microwave, this thing will give you a lot more capability.
Okay, yeah.
You know, you could bake, you could broil, you could air fry, and those things it does pretty well. So,
So this is the Panasonic Home Chef 4 Plus 1. What kind of price point is this at?
That's about $580.
Oh, okay. So it's a... Yeah, but okay.
It's more than a microwave.
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of how I'm balancing it out in my mind. I mean,
yeah.
If it's doing air frying, if it's doing broiling, and convection, that really is handling a lot of different things. Great for probably people in apartments and things like that.
Now, if you're going to pay $200, $250 for a microwave, another $200, $250 for an air fryer.
Yeah.
Then you're not all that much different, and the space it saves might be worth the extra $50, $60.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, this does something else that others don't do. You remember where they say you cannot put metal into a microwave oven?
Yeah.
This thing has an accessory called the Magic Pot.
Okay.
And this accessory, this accessory does a whole lot more, gives you a lot more capability than just the oven.
Mm-hmm.
This Magic Pot can go into the bottom of the oven and it heats up.
Mm-hmm.
The microwaves make this thing heat up. You can sear with it. You can steam with it. You can make soups with it. It is really a nice addition to the oven, because what the microwave can't do, this thing can. You can cook hamburgers, you can sear steaks, you can make soups. It's $129, not cheap.
And that's on top of the $500 or so for the whole thing.
That's right.
But now you said you had two of these things to cover. You had a second one?
Oh, I sure do. If the Panasonic Home Chef 4 Plus 1 is a Chevrolet, the Innova Precision 2 oven is a Ferrari.
Okay.
This thing is much smarter, and it really is an oven. This does things that you can't get in a standard oven.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in professional kitchens, they have something called a combi oven. The combi oven has steam. It can inject steam into what's being cooked. Mm-hmm. It can do exact temperature control, exact timing. And that's pretty much what this thing does, only this does it even better.
Okay.
What you can do is steam. You can use it to sous vide with or without steam. And it cooks your food. It cooks whatever you're cooking to a precise temperature for a precise amount of time. A temperature probe will let it get to where you want it to go, so you're not going to overcook or undercook what you're cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There are actual smarts inside this one. It's got an AI link, and it will recognize, there's a camera inside, it will recognize what it is you're cooking. It will read directions that are on like a bag of beans or something.
Yeah.
Cook them the way they're supposed to be cooked. And it will do things like bake bread, things that require steam.
I'm looking at this. Yeah, I mean, it's the baking, convection, the steaming, but it even will proof bread. So, you know, that's setting it up for, you know, the 150 to 200 range for heat. But it sounds precision-wise really good.
Yeah.
What is the price point on this, though?
This is not cheap. It's $1,299.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But if you're replacing an oven, this is not all that expensive. If you want something on your countertop, it's not that expensive.
Yeah, got a very fair point there. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That is Mark Brownstein. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround.
In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. And there is a lot of easy sleuthing you can do to find out if something is amiss. And I'm going to walk you through a text message that I received just yesterday. And it comes from a phone number, just a regular phone number. It doesn't come from the usual spot, which kind of already was a key thing for me. I happened to look up the phone number, and it belongs to a nice elderly lady off in Alabama. And so that already tells me what is next to follow is not likely the real thing. But it starts off, Amazon refund update. Dear valued customer. Oh, it doesn't have my name. That's a key little thing to watch out for. We appreciate your recent purchase on Amazon. As part of our commitment to quality, we regularly monitor orders to ensure products meet the accuracy and reliability standards outlined in their listings. After a recent assessment, we found an item from your order may not fully match its advertised description or meet Amazon's quality expectations. Be very interesting considering I've never received anything like this from Amazon ever. But to resolve this, we're offering you a refund without the need to return the item. Okay, that's a little odd. Once your refund request is submitted, the amount will be credited back to your original payment method. To proceed, please click the secure link below. All right, so all of that is all. It sounds all right. The wording seems to be good. There's the proper punctuation and all of that. But then I get down to the URL, the link, and it's spelled out right there. It's odd. It does have a little emoji with a link next to it, but it then gives me https://shorturl.at. All right. So if you aren't familiar, Amazon actually has their own short URLs available. A.co. It's not even Amazon.com. It's just A.co. And that allows them to send short URLs. And they can put in whatever. And this one's obviously going to send me off to some level of confirmation. It's going to unpack, hey, we had a winner here. We had somebody click on the link. We know that they're on the hook. So wherever this is going to go, I don't know. I don't really care. I'm not going to proceed with this. It does thank me. Thank you for your trust in Amazon. We apologize for any inconvenience and appreciate your understanding. Best regards, Amazon customer service team. Look, there's just a few little things all right there that it should be my little alarm bells, should be your alarm bells going off in your head saying, this doesn't pass the smell test. It just already seems like a spam. So I'm on an iPhone, so I'm going to hit report spam, delete and report spam. Boom, it's gone. I won't ever deal with that one again. You shouldn't either. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Across the country, folks are listening to A Nerd? Yep, Benjamin Rockwell is back at it again. And now, with a quest of enriching your experience with computers, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, the website is computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. You can check out the podcast there. You can download that, of course. You can also reach out to us on the website. We have the news up there. However you want to go with reaching out to us, we do want to answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. You can also phone me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Steve Keske joins me now. And Steve, you were mentioning before we hit record something about a digital bridge, and it's not what most people would think about.
No. You know how I am with people with disabilities.
Yes. Yes. I mean, okay. So for those who haven't heard Steve before, he is legally blind, and he's been tracking a lot of this over the years.
Oh, yeah.
And... and go for
it. Kinds of stuff.
Yes.
In this case, it's with those people out there that are in wheelchairs because they have had spinal injuries, including a whole severed spinal cord.
Yeah.
And now they have been, you know, it used to be that you go in the hospital. They give you physical therapy and how to use your wheelchair, and all of a sudden,
yeah,
out the door you go.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. But people have been experimenting with a lot of things. And now there is a Swiss company.
Yeah.
Or actually not company yet. A group of scientists with Swiss universities and things on this are
sure,
but what they've come up with,
I mean, they've got to find funding somewhere, and yeah. Universities are usually looking to chase ahead because there's so much that comes out
sure.
of something that looks into this.
Yeah, well, in this case, what they have started out doing was how can we bridge the gap between the good, healthy nerves,
yeah,
to the ones that are below the damaged.
Yes.
And so they started talking about, you know, how can we bridge this gap?
Yeah.
And that was what is called a digital bridge, is this bridging over this gap.
Yeah.
Now, again, they've had to go out there and train a person's brain to think about how to remove or, you know, move again that yeah. same limb in the same way as they did before, because, you know, not all those nerve cells are there.
Yes.
Nerve connections.
Yes.
But what they have done is being able to take and put on a cap or something on this order and being able to actually access a AI type computer that'll take those inputs, interpret them, go down to the stimulus side and stimulate those muscles.
Yeah. And it's interesting because now you've referenced AI. AI is going to be helping this move a lot faster.
Oh, yeah.
One of the first ones we saw, and I remember talking about this a long time ago. There was a guy, and I looked it up, Gert Jan Oskam. I'm presuming that's it kind of feels Dutch. I'm not quite sure. He lost the ability to walk in 2011 when he injured his spine in a bicycle accident, a cycling accident. And then 6 years later, they had done a wide array of electrodes that were implanted all the way along to allow for that digital bridge, as you've described it. To help him, and it took him about a year to walk after that. There was a lot of training and adjustment for that. And the latest updates, it seems, for him is he is able to walk fairly well. It is not it is not so much a matter of any means. Yeah, but it is able to get him moving without crutches. Mm-hmm. And he's actually gotten to the point now where there's been some level of healing along the way because of his brain activity and all of that and his body moving along that it has developed some additional pathways. So he can actually walk with crutches now, even with the devices turned off. So this is an exciting just pathway for any for many people who have had these types of injuries.
Yep, and I can see where a lot of this technology is going.
Yeah.
Using brain implants to being able to go in and literally put an implant into the brain so that the person can say, well, let's see, I want to move my big toe. Oh, left or right. Okay. And it can make that actually toe move.
Yes. Yes.
In one example that they showed me on the video that I was watching, is they said, okay, let's unplug your digital implant,
yeah,
in your spine,
yeah,
okay, and they hooked it up to a exoskeleton,
okay,
and no buttons, no nothing else, and she was having the actual exoskeleton actually moving.
Yes, I've seen one of those exoskeletons at CES.
Yeah.
I think you were there with me. A matter of a guy was walking that would not have been able to walk without that.
Yeah.
And very exciting things.
Yeah. And that's with an exoskeleton. In this case, she is moving the exoskeleton, and she's not in the exoskeleton. She's just sitting across the room, you know, and making it move. And the guy is going, okay.
Yeah. So now I do want to, in the last few minutes we've got here, I do want to kind of take an interesting detour related to this. And you and I have talked about this. I am in support of things like these brain implants and spine implants for people who, where it is distinctly restoring the normal activity in their lives. It's what we would do with any kind of medical operations, you know, whether we're installing, giving somebody a brand new hip or brand new knees or replacing bones with titanium.
Yeah.
But I also, and I think you're probably still with me on this. I don't go in the direction of, oh, we need to all have brain implants so we can go surf the internet or things like that.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you know, anytime you have a computer, it's, shall we say, hackable.
Yes.
Okay. Any computer. When I was taking my first computer courses, my instructor turned to me and said, just remember this. We all said, what? The only secure computer is the one that's unplugged from the wall.
Yeah, very true. And that's been said time and time again since many, many years before people even thought about computing.
Sure. Yep. And it's still true today. You know, the only secure one is the one that's unplugged.
Completely unplugged, powered down. There's nothing going.
No.
Yeah, I mean, we can. And when we start moving this into, and there are people who are trying to push for bridging that gap there and connecting to the internet, connecting to electronics, and connecting to all of that. Just to me, it sounds, feels just ripe for disaster.
Oh, yeah. Anytime you have technology, there's two sides to the technology. Using it correctly or incorrectly.
That's a gentle way of putting it.
I try.
Yes, indeed. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'm going to be back with, I have no idea what we're going to talk about next, but it'll be next year in just a moment here on Computer Talk Radio. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373. 888. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. Feel free to call any time. I'm not going to answer it at 3 o'clock in the morning. Just telling you up front. But if I don't answer, that's okay. Leave a message. I will get back to you just as soon as I can. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now, and one of the things that's kind of buried in some of the discussions you and I have had over the over recent months is that you've gotten in, you looked into telemedicine years before COVID ever showed up, and I wanted to kind of get your idea on that front. I think everybody got exposed to a lot of the telemedicine concept, back in 2020 when everybody was sent home. But hey, I still need to get to the doctor. And it's perfectly understandable. We had to have doctor's appointments. And it has, that field has just grown in leaps and bounds since then.
It has. It has. Unfortunately, I was 10 years too early when I created Patient Forward, but it's critical. There's actually 83 million Americans that lack access to a primary care doctor. There's like 80% of the counties that don't have primary doctors in them.
Wow. That's some pretty big numbers.
It's yes. And so what do you do, right? You need to see a doctor and they're not there.
Mm-hmm.
Technology comes to play. Unfortunately, before COVID, though, a lot of the regulations and legislation wasn't in place to enable it, particularly from the insurance perspective.
Sure. And then there was HIPAA. And, oh, yeah, we can't have any information going over the internet. And we're still dealing with that. You know, I communicate with my doctor probably a couple of times in between visits. And because, you know, we tweak the medicines. I'm going through a weight loss path, if you will. And some of those little tweaks, hey, I'm going to do this, I'm going to adjust that. And they're like, yep, go for it. But it's funny, too, with telemedicine. So I now get when I get my blood work done a couple of times a year, I get my results back before my doctor sees my results, which is absolutely cool. You know, because, hey, it pops up. Hey, it's there.
Write the order. Yeah. They could write the order in such a way that the lab won't show you the results until the doctor just clicks a button.
Yeah.
Depends how the doctor writes the order.
Yeah.
And you have a doctor who's nice and will let you see the results.
Well, I don't have any of those life threatening things. It's not going to be all that dramatic if I see them first, but yeah.
Hopefully nothing shows up in your blood results that way.
Yeah, really.
But that's always the concern. It was interesting because I covered HIMSS, the Healthcare Information Management System Society conference in March, as well as MWC most recently. Remember at the Fontainebleau.
And one
of the things that's related is because networks and telecommunications is a critical component of telemedicine.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a synchronous event.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things they laughed about at MWC, no one said it on camera, but they all said it off camera. So it was definitely in the whispers. And they're like, where's remote surgery? They've been telling us we were getting remote surgery, you know, for how many years? Where's remote surgery?
I saw remote surgery. I think it was in, I'm going to take a stab at it. I'm going to say it was in a Heinlein book, you know, way back when. And that sparked my mind back when, you know, I was a teenager. And didn't we see one just in the last couple of weeks?
I think there might have been something on the news, but I was actually thinking if there's going to be a new thing where doctors get to work remotely too.
With how much we're paying them.
I'm a neurosurgeon.
I'm kidding.
I work from home. And the hospitals demand the doctors return to the hospitals.
Yeah.
But I'm using the technology and it's at home. Why do I have to do it in that location? But I can't get any germs to them. How are they going to transfer through the technology?
Sure.
Well, wouldn't that be like a Scientopia? Futurecopia science movie. That'd be kind of funny.
Yeah, definitely.
Who would think a doctor could work from home? But it might be, you know, maybe, but it still hasn't got there yet. So we're hoping on it. There was at CES last year, OnMed had this portable booth that you could put in these rural communities for telemedicine.
Okay.
Which, you know, we looked at stuff like that when I was at AT&T too. And the question is always, where do you put them, right?
Yeah.
You got your drugstores, you got your firehouses. Those are always the popular locations because your firehouse might have a paramedic, maybe.
Sure. You know,
or it's a city building that a lot of towns have. Even if you have a volunteer fire department, you probably have a fire department building.
Yes.
Because, you know, you're rural. When you get rural, it's kind of where do you get
it? Sure.
You know, maybe you might not have telecommunications at home because a lot of times the latency on rural internet connections makes technology challenging, as you know, if you're rural.
Yes.
Very familiar with that. It's getting better, though, I think. No?
Yes.
A little bit?
Well, okay, so it's interesting. In my area, so I've got gig fiber, gig up, gig down, and that was all put into place. They set up something in one of the previous presidential administrations. I don't know when, but there was a lot of funding for companies to come along and distribute, do this fiber infrastructure. But they weren't doing it for in the city. So where I'm at, I am outside of a major city by 45 minutes to an hour. And in the major city, they don't have the speeds of internet that I have out here in the boonies.
Oh, wow. So, when I was in the boonies, I had microwave, which depended on the streaming service,
as to
how it worked.
Sure.
And depended upon the web service as to how it works, which is one of the issues that people have with the telemedicine.
Yeah.
One of the people that participated, we had the WISP report on telemedicine that came out recently. It's fully public and the video's out. Minty Health was one of the contributors, and their mission is they think everyone should have a smart stethoscope at home. Because just like a thermometer is the next thing that gives the most amount of information that you can give to someone remotely.
That's something cool. I hadn't heard about that. We've got the, folks who have Apple Watches, you've got your pulse stuff, and they can do a little bit of ECG stuff. And a lot of people got pulse ox meters when we had COVID going on. But
you need the oxygen meters and all of that. There's also some machines you can do to where it's in our CES coverage, but you put your hands on and connect to it. And on the other side, it literally shows your heartbeat and your breathing on a model that the doctor can listen to. That's an exact replica of what's going on in your body in another location.
Nice. Nice. Right? Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. And this is technology just building towards a healthier world, which is good.
Oh, absolutely. There was even some technology that you could scan for cancers using an iPhone in third world countries that would bring cancer screening down to pennies instead of big complicated exams.
I remember there was some kid that did it, like a 12-13-year-old kid that came up with that program to do that cancer screening. It was a really cool thing. I talked about that about a year ago on our news items.
Okay. Yeah, this one was for cervical, but it's interesting because of the capabilities of the phone with the camera and the telecommunications.
If you
can find a way to capture what you need to capture, you can involve telemedicine. So speaking of healthcare, I have the AI in Medicine Promise or Peril webinar on December 4th at 10 a.m. So if you go to our YouTube channel at TBW Advisors, T for Technical, B for Business, W for Whisper, TBW Advisors, in the post section for the community, you'll see a link where you can sign up and join us. And we'd love to have you register, submit questions, join us if you'd like to the event, or submit a question.
Very cool. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And Dr. Doreen Galley.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Emma's question is one that has plagued us for a long time. Why is my internet service provider's promise of unlimited data often followed by throttling or reduced speed? Now, Emma reached out to me at computertalkradio.com, and you can do it as well. I am more than happy to answer any of your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. So we get back to Emma and this whole promise of unlimited data followed by throttling or reduced speed. And I understand both sides of this argument, and I don't agree with everything on either side. So yes, on one side, it's like being told you can drive as much as you want, but after a certain amount of miles, you're driving along in your car, all of a sudden the speed limit drops and you can no longer drive what we would consider to be highway speeds. You're being reduced down. And there are a lot of different internet service providers that have offered up unlimited data. This is a very common practice, but they also have put in fair use clauses. And those fair use clauses allow them to throttle after heavy. And when we talk heavy usage that I'm talking about, we're talking about absolutely demonstrably hideous amounts of heavy usage. And what they do is they look across and they go, okay, this is somebody working from home. Okay, this person over here, they're going ahead and they are doing a lot of television watching, but you know what? That's still okay. What they're looking for, what they're seeking out is people who are trying to use a personal plan for something like a business. And picture it like this. They're looking for someone who is not working from home, but instead has an office in their home that has a dozen people all moving video across the internet. They are very, very impacting on the core business of that internet service provider. And this can come in a number of other forms to people who download absolutely ridiculous amounts of information, and they're also uploading ridiculous amounts of information. You have to be moving terabytes of data on a very, very short basis, a matter of, you know, a couple of terabytes a day kind of thing for most of your home internet service providers. Yes, the realm of the folks over on the mobile side, it's going to be a lot less than that, but it's still a matter of they're trying to ensure that you are being fair with them. When we start seeing this targeting by the internet service providers, they aren't targeting the top 20%. They're not targeting the top 1%. They're targeting the top 0.01%. The people who are doing that 1 in 10,000 kind of information where they're just, you've got to be kidding me. How are you running up this kind of quote unquote unlimited data? And they have to everybody has to understand, the internet service providers know this all too well. Somebody who's putting in that much information and both taking in and putting out that kind of information, they are causing network congestion. And this network congestion during peak times can lead to lower speeds across everybody else. So these are the impactors. These are the people who are really going way too far. I am surprised that somebody would reach out to me asking this question, and they may be full of the fear that they've heard about out there. And yes, there are internet service providers that are going through and they are prioritizing traffic or deprioritizing traffic. So they may be cutting down on the various peer-to-peer networking file sharing, which is not always legal, and favoring things like your Netflix and Prime Video and things like that. Of course, this all has to be mixed in with the idea of you may be experiencing what you think is a throttling by your internet service provider, whereas your own equipment in the house may not actually be handling the speeds that you think you're supposed to be getting. I'll tell you, there's a lot of different things just beyond that. Now, if you've communicated to them and you've explained this is what I'm doing, and they say, yeah, you're outside of the realm of reasonability, they can have that discussion with you. And this is one of the things I would always tell everybody. A matter of if you're experiencing this, the first thing you should be doing is having a very nice and very polite conversation. Remember, we go back to the beginning where I say there are fair use clauses. They are allowed to say, you've got 12 people in your home and doing all kinds of traffic, and that is not something which you're paying for. You're paying for a personal account, not a business account. And as for that, yeah, we're going to put caps on this. We're going to really reduce things down. And this is something that's legal for them to do. And maybe you can work out an arrangement. Can I upgrade plans? Is there a reasonable upgrade that I can put in that allows me to move forward with what I'm doing without running too far afoul of what you guys are considering here? And you work through that with them. I will tell you, talking with people, communicating, expressing your concern is always going to be a key thing. Yes, along the way, you do need to read the fine print. They are allowed to do that. You might check into your equipment. You might track your own usage. Your own usage may be far more than you think it is. And by going through and tracking all of the information that's going in and out of your internet service provider, that can help you know whether your unlimited plan is actually delivering on what they promised. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting, archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and a lot of how that intertwines. And Rachel had a question, what do I do when two different IT people give me different advice? And now this is kind of tricky because, yes, there are a lot of different IT people out there, and they've got a lot of different background. They have a lot of different points of view, and they may arrive to similar or different conclusions on what's going wrong. It's like seeing two mechanics, and they recommend two different fixes for the same rattle in your car, and it's confusing, but not always contradictory. One of the things I do when somebody comes up to me and they ask me a computer question, I will feed them a couple of different responses. You've got a technical question for me. I'd say, well, first off, I would look at X, then I'd look at Y, and then I'd look at Z. And this is kind of my typical approach. I try to inform because not every computer question is black and white. Not every computer problem out there is going to be, this is exactly what it is, and there's no other option out there. So what do I want you to do? Both of these IT people, you want to sit down and you want to have kind of a documentation of what their suggestions are. Having a written comparison is going to help you with any kind of follow-up questions and help clarify misunderstandings. All right, so this is key. Any kind of tech issue you're dealing with, I will deal with people on the phone. I answer computer questions over the phone, but I actually prefer when it's written down because I can go through and I can do my research and I can frame the answer and I can provide a lot of different helper items along there, links to corrections and so forth. This is if you're doing a correction. Sometimes IT advice comes in the form of fixing problems. Sometimes it's solutions to programs, is various ideas that are out there. What should you do with outfitting your company with computers? There's all kinds of different directions. But the key thing you want to do when you have two different people providing you information, you want to look for the common ground. Sometimes the answers are in a situation where they are different in their approach, but not necessarily in the destination. And that can be a matter of first you're going to load up this, 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 and this. And then the other person might have a keyboard shortcut and you just do whatever command out there, and those different items are going to arrive at the same location. So that's another thing. Another direction I would always go in is say, hey, I got this different recommendation from Joe earlier. Can we walk through what Joe said? And maybe you guys are saying the same thing and I'm just misunderstanding this, or maybe, you know, and you just kind of approach that, try to do that in a friendly manner. You don't want to sound accusatory. You want to say, look, I'm just looking for the best answer. I'm looking for the right way to get things done. And they may, you know, they may come together and they may say, well, unfortunately, some of them will say, well, Joe's an idiot. I have no idea why he said that. But in reality, a lot of them will arrive at the same kind of destination, even though the avenue, the map to get there may be different. Of course, you can always try to figure out, and you can ask him as well, who owns that particular issue. A single point of contact avoids any kind of conflicting advice that you might get from these multiple voices out there. Now, one other direction, and I always hate to say this, but the official documentation. In the old days, it would be read the manual. But these days, you can go out on the internet and you can look up a lot of these different things that you might be presenting to these different IT people. And there may be issues, too, where, like, the official documentation may be a matter of, this is our company policy. This is how you must do it. And somebody else may come along. I might come along and say, look, I've got a shortcut for this. This isn't the official documented route, but this is a way around some of the pitfalls that you might come along with. And it is not in our policy, but it's allowable. So you can go in this route. And I mean, if you want to follow the path, that's always good. Always follow the policy, the protocol and all of that that your company has issued out. I will tell you all the way along, asking for clarity needs to be done in the approach that you're trying to look mature, responsible. And you've got to be careful that you're not telling them that you mistrust them. When people disagree, seeking that clarity, getting down to the root item and saying, hey, this is what I'm seeing here. Can you help me through this? That's going to always be the best approach. And perhaps get them both together. Get them together and they may be able to elucidate and provide more information, or they may come to an agreement that one of them has a better approach than the other. That's just a crazy different thing that you're going to have to deal with, and I wish you the best of luck. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Kim's question, why is setting up duplex, which is double-sided printing, inconsistent across different printers? And I get this. This is something that has frustrated us for ages. And it's not just duplex printing. It's all of the different sizing, all of the different everything. It's kind of like having two kitchens and you're using the same recipe, but you've got different ovens, and so you might get a little bit different results because ovens are set differently. They may operate a little bit differently, the consistency and heat and stuff like that. So you have to use it as a guideline. And printer driver variations are across the board. Every single printer manufacturer out there has their own way of setting up these drivers. And even in amongst the different years that these printers come out and the different sets of drivers, the duplex settings may be in different spots. Generally, they're in kind of a rough location. So you've got to look into that and just deal with that. And it's unfortunate for that. But there's also some level of printer firmware limits. For instance, some models may support manual duplex only, and that's an annoying thing. But they also may set up auto duplexing only in certain trays. So you can do the auto duplex if you're doing it out of tray 2 or 3, but tray 1, that's the letterhead tray. It's already set up for that, and they don't allow duplex on letterhead. And some of these configurations for these drivers that you're dealing with, especially in the office, which is usually where you find multiple printers, the IT personnel actually set up the printer, and they have certain guidelines that they've got to go through. And I've experienced this in a few different spots where I had to configure the drivers so that if they were trying to print to letterhead, they could only do certain things, and everything else went to other trays. Additionally, we've got page layout, document formatting, and stuff like that may actually override the duplex settings. You've got margins or odd and even pages, and that may shut things down. Also, if you're sending the print job on out, but it's coming from a different software package, Microsoft Word versus Adobe PDF, they may have different ways that they deal with a printer. And sometimes network printers, they've just got shared configurations that ignore all of your personal preferences whatsoever. And it's unfortunate. And I get it. There are so many different layers that we've got going on. We've got so many different things that we have to deal with. And I get the frustration. I've had to deal with that frustration on many occasions. And my best suggestion, Kim, while recognizing that this is a problem, it's a problem that I want to hopefully encourage you to relax and just say, you know what? There are bigger things in life. I hate saying that. I feel bad for saying that. And I apologize. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.